high fly left field. Stewart going back, and Buxton with an insurance run in the eighth. His sixth home run of the year, and the Twins' lead has grown to four.
And the Twins. Breathe a sigh of relief. Four out of five from the Detroit Tigers. We will break down a set of Twins games like it is football, and then we're going to break down football because it's week one of the NFL season, and the Minnesota Vikings are already stumbling into Packers week. So Mackie and Judd is rocking this week. A quick shout out and thank you to Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated has been around for over 100 years in the state of Minnesota, helping business owners. It helps tremendously to have an insurance company that gives you peace of mind as a business owner as you navigate the challenges of your day-to-day. When you partner with Federated, you get more than just a policy. You benefit from over a century of experience in making businesses as successful as they can be. Visit federatedinsurance.com to find your local representative. And remember, at Federated Insurance, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
And welcome into the show. Declan Goff quarantining from his first flight during the COVID period.
I liked it. It was actually really more enjoyable. And they board the plane in reverse order now. So now they board the plane from back to first.
Okay, see, I feel like they should have been doing that for a long time.
Oh, they should have.
100%.
But the rich people didn't like that.
Correct.
So it scared them.
But why would you want to get on the plane? Like, I want to be the last person to board the plane, period, anyways, because I don't want to sit there for an extra 30 minutes.
Yeah, but you are thinking the way that I do, which is the coach perspective on life. If you're a first class person,
you want that
cocktail. You get in, cocktail immediately in hand. Nobody bothers you. You sit there and get drunk.
That's a good point. Although I usually have a cocktail in hand at like the airport bar while I'm waiting for coach.
So do I. But I'm saying if you can get in that big fluffy seat in first class, right, and get the mimosa immediately, are you going to say no?
It's a game changer. No. It is a game changer.
Anyway, Declan is right.
It's a fair point.
This is the correct way to do it. He's right.
So
we have a lot to get to here, gentlemen. Jay Williams from ESPN Radio and from ESPN TV will join us to talk about week one of the NFL season and anything else we want to dive into with him. We will discuss whether the Vikings are primed to win the NFC North. You can also find our daily Vikings discussions on Purple Daily with Mackie and Judd, the podcast, Apple, Spotify, and ScoreNorth.com and YouTube.com/Purple Daily Podcast. But boys,
football.
We break down Twins games like they are football games, and the Twins just played a five-game series against the Detroit Tigers. It wasn't always pretty, certainly a lot of things to nitpick, but ultimately they take four out of five. They have righted the ship after, a six-game losing streak that resulted in a team meeting. And the Twins right now, it took us a while to find this. MLB.com does have their ducks in a row, though, with these postseason seeds. So the Twins are still third in the American League Central, but they are 26-17. So because they're third in the division and the first two teams in each division occupy collectively the top six seeds out of eight, the Twins are technically the seventh seed in the American League right now if the playoffs started today, and they would play a three-game series against Cleveland and that pitching staff that I think everybody would like to avoid. But let's throw it to Judd here. You start us off wherever you want, breaking baseball down like it's football.
I got a quick question first. Why didn't we just go with the top eight records in each league?
I got to make it as confusing as possible. But just like your favorite sport, the NHL.
Okay. I'm just very confused by that one. I'd like to start here. And Phil, I think we did this exercise last week, and I think we can start to do it now, Twins-wise, week by week. But after what we saw in this homestand, particularly from Berríos, Rich Hill, who made two starts, and probably most importantly, Pineda, who made two starts, I think the really interesting talker, as it appears the Twins for sure are going to be in at least that first round of the playoffs, which is going to be a best of three series, is
they're in.
What is your rotation in that series? Because I think now it's really intriguing. And I'm going to tell you right now mine, and I'm going to do this week by week, scorenorth.com as well, and explain myself.
We might need it multiple times a week.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I think we need
it. It's a lot of fun.
For sure, after every Barrios, Maeda, and Pineda start,
then I can do that too. You know what? I'm looking for stuff.
How about daily? Can we do it daily?
You know what? Hourly. I changed my mind.
There's two off days this week. Can we still do it on the off days?
No, I've changed my mind again. Oh my God, I'm so flustered. Mine is Maeda, game one. He's been outstanding. I think he has done everything that you possibly could ask after the Gratterall trade. He's been great. But now it gets interesting because I think I am, after what I've seen in two starts, gentlemen, I think I'm going Pineda game two, Barrios game three, very much locked to Rich Hill.
This is Baldelli on Pineda's wonderful outing.
When I tell you it was, I'm sure it was hard to even get a grip on the ball. That's what it was. Did he come in? Did Big Mike come in and complain at all or look uncomfortable out on the mound? Nothing. Absolutely none of that. He just continued to pitch. He continues to do his job, and he did a great job.
Okay, and I believe his pitch count was something like 103, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they let that one slip. I don't know if they knew he was at 100.
But this is back-to-back starts.
Somebody miscounted. That's dangerous.
This is back-to-back starts. This is back-to-back. In start one, which was essentially his first start in a year coming off that 60-game suspension, which carried over more so because of the pandemic, He threw 81 pitches, okay? And then yesterday, 100-plus pitches. Michael Pineda's a guy the Twins aren't concerned about. He's the only one, I think, when it comes to pitch counts. He has pitched so well, and I like his demeanor, and I like what he brings, and I don't think a big game would fluster him much. He just seems to be sort of calm and relaxed.
He is. He's super chill.
I'm going to go with Maeda based on what he's done. Pineda, Barrios, and this might be, and this is where it gets dicey, because Barrios, largely based on his last start, which was outstanding, and if he is that guy, I start him for sure, and then I tie him to Rich Hill. And the reason why I'm bailing more and more on Hill is I don't know what I'm going to get stamina-wise. Like, it just sort of now, and he's 40, he's been hurt a lot, but if you watch him pitch, you guys, it just sort of runs out at some point in time. And look, if it's after five, that's absolutely fine. But the problem is sometimes it's sort of like in the fourth or so. So if Barrios struggles, I would certainly turn to Rich Hill. But my starters, Maeda, Pineda, Barrios.
All right. I love this.
This is a fun exercise, you guys.
Football.
So I tweeted yesterday in the heat of the moment. I said my updated Twins playoff rotation.
We used this, but by the way, on the podcast with DePue.
That's what DePue said.
I immediately used it.
I'm gonna rip DePue for being high maintenance for a second, and I know that he's gonna be listening to this. DePue texted me yesterday and he goes, "Hey, who sent that audiogram out of my take on Pineda?" And I said, "I probably Declan probably sent that." He goes, "Because my I think I said that like 4 days ago, and my take on it has changed since the clip came out."
You can't worry about that in this business.
Come on, DePue. I got the same message.
First of all, you got to stick to your takes, okay? If your takes are wildly changing every 4 days, DePue, come on now. Stick to your convictions. But I said my updated Twins playoff rotation is Mike Pineda number one, Kenta Maeda number two. I'm buying into Judd has changed his thought on this since last week, which it's evolving. But I'm sticking with Rich Hill handcuffed to Jose Barrios in game three, and then Randy Dobnak for, if you get to a five-game series, then Randy Dobnak becomes your number four starter in that playoff series. So here's my thought. This is crazy, and I wouldn't have guessed this, but Michael Pineda has never pitched in a postseason game. He pitched for the Yankees for like 4 years.
Yeah.
And I'd have to go through and see like what the circumstances were, or if he just didn't make the postseason rotations or what, but I don't believe he has ever pitched in a postseason game. I did not realize that when I sent this tweet out yesterday. I just assumed, I don't know if he's gotten rocked or if he's been lights out, but I'm assuming he's pitched in a postseason game before. Kenta Maeda has pitched in like 25 postseason games in his career. Sometimes that matters, sometimes it doesn't. If I'm on the fence and it's a coin flip, I'll go with the guy who has at least stood on that mound 24 times as my option. But to me, it doesn't really matter in what order you start these guys. These are your two best, most reliable starting pitchers, Kenta Maeda and Michael Pineda. And the reason I would lean Pineda over Maeda is because, despite the fact that Maeda has gone deep into ball games for the most part this season, I think Pineda is more likely to give you like seven innings and have a pitch count that goes over 100 if needed. He's just a little bit more durable historically when they're both healthy and they're both going to be on the mound. Pineda is a little bit more of a horse, and I like that in game one, but I will not die on this hill. Those are your number one and number two starters, and in whatever order you want to use them, I will not fight you.
So in game three, you're going to handcuff Rich Hill to Berríos, but you're going to start Rich Hill where I'm going to start Berríos, correct?
Yes, and here's why, and this is subject to change.
This is the interesting one, I think.
Subject to change,
I like
whenever,
this one. Let's hear it.
So the aesthetic of Rich Hill is horrible to watch. Like, he huffs, he puffs, he's old, he's grunting to throw 9 miles an hour.
He's basically my day. Like, Rich Hill pitches like I live. He huffs, he puffs, he swears, he worries, he sweats, he looks miserable.
He's always got, like, low-key anxiety even when he's you know, happy and chilled out.
Yes. He's me in my day.
But here's the thing, okay? We're seeing Rich Hill shaking off the rust right now. You got to keep in mind, this is like, we're watching, like, April Rich Hill right now. Mm-hmm. You know, he's made a handful of starts. He's coming off surgery. And you're watching him try to get a feel for that curveball. And even though aesthetically in that game against the Tigers 2 days ago, he doesn't look great, he still goes five innings, walks nobody, gives up only two runs. And then you look, okay, a couple starts ago, you know, the start at Cleveland, right? God, that just looked uncomfortable. He's just like falling behind every hitter. But what were the results? Rich Hill, five innings, one run allowed. So even when he's rusty and when he's kind of at his worst and most uncomfortable, he's still giving you five innings in a big game against Cleveland. He's giving you five with no walks in this game a couple days ago against the Tigers. And if he can continue to get a feel for that breaking ball, and if he can continue to knock the rust off and stay healthy, I just think, you know, based on his pedigree in the postseason and his history the last 5 years when he's been healthy, he's been one of the best statistical pitchers in baseball, I would still give him the benefit of the doubt. Berríos obviously is the most talented pitcher on the staff, and he's coming off a really good outing. But he gets super worked up and nervous in big games. He gets super worked up and nervous against the Pirates sometimes. So I just, like, again, this is subject to change over the next 3 weeks, but I need to see more from Berríos. It sounds like he had a family situation that was maybe on his mind, and we'll see if he gains just a little bit more clarity here over the coming weeks. But when you look at Berríos and you look at Hill, one guy's a Ferrari, the other guy is like a Ford Escape or something.
Oh, he's a Pinto, but God bless him for it.
But at the end of the day, the results with Rich Hill could wind up being better than you think when you watch him.
So the reason why I would lock them together and handcuff them but go Berríos and Hill is it becomes very clear with Berríos within, this is the frightening thing, within probably his first three guys, if he's got it, both physically and mentally. And I feel like if you start him and you're like, it's not great, that Hill, with his experience, is the perfect guy to come in and clean that up and take over for Berríos. I feel like if you start Hill and it doesn't go great and you bring Berríos in, he's going to completely freak out because of the anxiety and you're putting him in a different position. Maybe not. I don't know. But that's why I feel like Hill would be the better guy to relieve Berríos than Berríos being put in unfamiliar territory to relieve Hill.
I think there's two things that you
it's
have
a
to
great look, conversation though.
With the handcuff situation, I think there's two things to consider. Number one is who is the guy that can just like get up in a flash and get ready within 10 minutes. And Berríos is much more likely to be like just physically, like if it was hey Rich Hill, you're handcuffed to Jose, you could either come in the first inning or you could come in the fifth. We don't know yet, but you have to be ready. He would be like, I'm 40, dude. Like, it literally takes me 6 hours to get ready for a start.
You'd have to have him up basically
at
throwing at the start of the game.
Yes.
Like, he'd have to be prepared to come in. Yeah.
And so it's just, like, logistically, it's tougher to handcuff Hill. Like, I think Hill just has to go through, like, a three-hour routine before the game, work with the trainers, go at his own pace, and just know that he's starting the game. With Berríos, I actually think the opposite. I think in terms of calming your nerves and anxiety, for him to sit there all day and think about the start and, here's my scouting report and, okay, I'm going to be pitching in this big game versus, hey, we may or may not use you today. Just kind of be ready. Oh, you're in right now. You go warm up 10 minutes. I think for him just to go in and pitch could be beneficial. Now, the best case scenario here is Jose Berríos gives you like three lights out starts the rest of September.
And then we change the whole thing and he starts game one.
Ends the conversation.
He starts game one.
He's your game one starter. And because think about this. If you have peak Berríos and you've got Maeda and Pineda all pitching at their best, that's a damn good rotation. Mm-hmm. And even like as it is for all the people that were sitting there chirping about like, can Josh Donaldson pitch? What about the crappy rotation? Like this was never a crappy rotation. No, it does not have a Max Scherzer like ace at the top of it. But Kenta Maeda has been pitching like one. Barrios has the capability of pitching like one. And Mike Pineda has pitched like one for the better part of like the last 14 months or so.
And does Jake come back too?
Jake Odorizzi?
That's a question.
That's going to be a sprint.
We don't know.
But that's a wild card too. So this is a really good rotation right now, at least the, like the top three and maybe four. And then we'll see from there. Declan, what would your rotation be?
Yeah, I would definitely go with Kenta Maeda number one. I just think he's earned it and he's been the most consistent pitcher. So he is my bona fide number one. I probably lean Big Mike on number two, just again in the small sample size and the consistency he's been able to do. I think them turning him loose on a pitch count and it doesn't really seem to faze him. I like him for game two. I'll actually go with Judd when it comes to the game three plan, and I would start Barrios and then handcuff him to Hill later in the innings. And I thought Rich Hill actually had more postseason relieving appearances than he does, and he actually only has one. But the Twins also don't really have a significant lefty arm that's not Taylor Rogers in that bullpen.
What do you mean? Caleb Fielbar is Mr. Lights Out,
oh,
baby.
Oh, yeah. I love me some Caleb Fielbar. Don't get me wrong. St. Paul Saint and Minnesota native. But I still think Rich Hill coming out of the bullpen as a lefty specialist and a guy that can be a swingman is more beneficial. And I actually think Jose would freak out more having to come in do the fifth inning, not really being used to doing that ever. I know he's younger and healthier, so he can probably get up quicker. But I probably go Jose Barrios. And if he can get through that first inning and kill that Brad Radke disease he likes to have in that first few outings, then I feel more comfortable with them, and you can bring in Rich Hill more strategically, and he gives you lefty arm. So I would definitely go Maeda, Pineda, Barrios with a handcuff to Rich Hill, and then Randy Dobnak for game four if it's necessary.
Football.
Can we please, and we're going to talk about the guy that plays in left for the Twins, but before we do that, can we please talk about Byron Buxton's last, what, 3 or 4 days? Can we?
So much fun.
I can't tell you guys, as a baseball fan who loves to see unique stuff, right? I can't tell you guys how much fun it is to see this guy when he is healthy and able to play, make a difference in games. That, like, if I was to come up to you on Saturday and say, how do you think this game ends? You might say, Sano walk-off. You might say base hit to right field, right? Like there'd be 5 or 6 permutations of endings of games that you both could probably provide me. And there have probably been, in terms of walk-off hits in this league, there have been hundreds through the years of home runs and singles and stuff, right? But do you recall a routine ground ball to shortstop, which is for the majority, 99 of 100 people, a routine ground ball out, game done, too bad, or game tied, that wins a game? I mean, because on Saturday night, Byron Buxton literally hit a ball to the Tiger shortstop, and the only thing Castro probably could have done differently was charge it a bit, but like he fundamentally did nothing wrong. He didn't bobble it. He didn't make a bad throw. He didn't do anything technically wrong. And Byron Buxton walked the Twins off with what really should have been a 6-3.
Can I say that you ask, like, you know, who can predict that? So I was watching the game with a friend. We were doing a driveway hang, socially distanced, with a TV outside on, what was it, Saturday night?
Saturday night.
Whatever night it was, right?
Yes, sir.
And so we're watching this inning unfold, and there's two runners on, first base is open, and I believe there was it one out at the time? It was two outs. It was two outs, right?
Two outs, and Rosario was on first, Cruz was on third, and Rosario
He took second.
Took second base.
Yep,
walked a second.
So when Buxton was there, the first base was open, and so you have the winning run at third base.
Yes.
And my friend says, Ground ball to the left side of the infield. He beats it out first thing. Like he literally called in.
Really?
Ground ball left side of the infield. Whoa. He beats it out and they score the run. Like that'd be interesting. And so then we start talking. You know, I think it was only like a 2 or 3 pitch at bat, or whatever it was, like a 3 pitch at bat. But I said, based on what you just said, I would consider walking Byron Buxton here. I get that you've got a pitcher with some control problems here in this inning. That if you walk the bases loaded, now he has to come to the next guy. And you can't then issue another walk or the game is over.
Yep.
So you're factoring that in too. But when Buxton is standing at home plate and you know that a fly ball to the outfield wins the game, any base hit wins the game, and a ground ball to the left side of the infield wins the game,
mm-hmm.
What are your options? You have to either strike him out or get him to pop up in the infield somewhere. So when you start to lay out all the options, I would, and this was a first guess because we talked about this as the inning was unfolding. I think it was a mistake to pitch to him in that spot. If you weren't like fully in and prepared, you should have played him on the left side of the infield like he was going to bunt. And like literally have those guys playing like 5 feet in on the grass.
No, you're right.
Because if you're gonna play the left side of your infield even with the bag on the edge of the dirt, the game's over if he hits a ground ball over there. And the way he swung, like he knew that if he hit a ground ball over there, the game's over.
He said
he just stuck his bat out.
He said post game, I put a T-ball swing on it on purpose.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is genius.
Yes.
Again, this is a guy who yes, he gets hurt a lot, but he's a smart player. He knows what he wants the approach to be. It does not always work, but he knows what he wants his approach to be. But most importantly, he can take that approach and can do things that probably right now, what do you think? Three guys in the league can do? Five guys maybe?
Billy Hamilton.
Might be pressing it.
If he could put a barrel on a ball, Billy Hamilton, who just got DFA'd by the Mets, I think.
He keeps getting DFA'd, too.
He can't make contact.
He's just done, I think.
The other thing Buxton did was, and I screenshotted this, it's on my Twitter account, at Phil Mackey. So he beats a ball into the dirt yesterday, literally, or it's, I think it was like just past the edge of the dirt in front of home plate, and it hit the grass first. But You watch the screen grab, and it's him getting on top of a ball and just chopping it down 6 feet in front of him at home plate. And you screenshot it there. Stand-up double. Now, I get that the pitcher, like, the ball deflects off the pitcher's glove and goes in the left field.
I know.
But he chops a ball in front of home plate.
Yes.
And one of the possible outcomes that played out yesterday was stand-up double because he's so fast. He also did this, too.
A high fly left field. Stewart going back, and Buxton with an insurance run in the eighth. His sixth home run of the year. And the Twins' lead has grown to four.
And it's like, it's why I keep saying, and people keep chirping me on Twitter and emailing and stuff, like, why are you such a homer, this, that. If Byron Buxton is healthy, and Josh Donaldson too, like, if those two dudes are healthy, they change the entire complexion of the roster. They make the pitchers better.
That's 100% true.
Like, there's just different ways you can win a baseball game. And so it's why I'm so bullish on, if those guys are healthy, then this is the best team in the American League, and I think they're going to win the World Series. I'm going to keep saying that as long as those guys are on the field.
They make such a huge impact as far as approach goes, as far as the difference. I mean, Buxton, you can't debate this, okay? Buxton's not normal. He's not a normal baseball player. He does things that you don't expect, that you can't predict. I guess in some cases you actually can, but it's still very difficult. And what Byron Buxton brings too is I love that the more I watch him play too, it's just really clear that although it does not always work for him, that he has an approach. He definitely has one. Like, this is not a, I'm going to go up there and no, he strikes out too much. I get that. But if you look at the fact that his at-bats, more and more to me, are rooted in a really pretty smart method at times, that's impressive. And I'll go back to it. When you go up to the plate, and if I'm not mistaken, his previous three at-bats on Saturday were strikeout swinging, ground ball to third. So he's not, you know, his day at the plate's not going great. And instead of going up there in the ninth and thinking to himself, you know what, I'm going to show these guys. I'm going to hit a home run, or I'm going to hit a line drive, or blah, blah, blah. His approach is T-ball swing, which he can do. This is why I have turned into a complete apologist for Buxton, because I really believe he's that good. And more importantly, I really believe that he makes an impact that the majority of guys, we can talk about home runs all we want, but the majority of guys don't have the ability to make the impact that he does. This is why I have become such a fan of, if he's healthy, to Phil's point, the difference that he makes in the lineup is just enormous. Don't talk to me about Sano. Don't talk to me. I want to see a guy that makes an impact that is one where you just say, oh my God, he hit a ground ball to shortstop and the Twins won in a walk-off.
He still has flaws. Yes. He's only walked once, and he's at this point still playing like every other day because they're trying to ease him back in, which we can talk about this week too. But ultimately, he showed three or four different times throughout the last few days why he's a game changer.
Football.
That is a fair ball, and it hit the bag. Continuing up the line, Wade scores. Donaldson scoring. They're going to wave another runner around. Rook Tucker will score. And now Rosario's hung up between second and third after clearing the bases with a double. He's tagged out.
All right. Breaking baseball down like it's football here.
Football.
We had the full Eddie Rosario experience this weekend. So obviously he clears the bases with a huge hit, and that's great. It's awesome. Go plate yourself three runs. But these are some of the things that happened with Eddie Rosario this weekend. So he runs through the stop sign at third base a few days ago. It was Saturday's game. These are kind of running together.
Sunday's game, and he nearly killed poor Tony Diaz, who turned around and basically thought, oh my God, I'm going to die now because this guy's going to kill me.
Gets thrown out at home by a mile because he shouldn't have been running home because the stop sign was put up in that spot. He also quit on a play in left field so he either didn't understand the ground rules or even if you don't understand the ground rules in that spot, if the ball ricochets around and bounces back onto the playing field, just pick it up and throw it back into the infield. And of course, he walks away from the ball laying on the ground and starts to state his case. It's okay, that's dude, just throw the ball in and then state your case. And then of course has the big, you just heard the highlight there. He has the big hit that clears the bases and gets thrown out at third base completely unnecessarily. And it was a little bit like when Michael Kadire used to have base hit to the outfield, and then he would purposely get caught up between first and second base to draw the throw from home to, instead of a guy throwing home from the outfield, he might throw to get Michael Kadire out. Mm-hmm. That wasn't Rosario's strategy. I think he was just trying to get to third because he thought the throw was going home. So anyways, your thoughts on the roller coaster that is Eddie Rosario.
All right. I've decided if you can't beat him, join him. And the Rosario experience bothers, I think it bothers fans. It for sure bothers us. But you know who puts up with it time and time again? And I've wondered for a long time now, when's it going to change? And clearly I'm just wrong. It's not. Rocco and the boys. All right. So as of today, I am naming myself the president of the Eddie Rosario Experience Fan Club. I am going to embrace it because you know what? There's some good. Because he's the guy that you work with who screws up time and time again, but he's got some talent. He just doesn't pay attention. He's the guy that screws up and then he comes back and hits a home run or something and saves his job. So I am going to embrace it. I am going to take the good with the bad and I'm going to laugh along too. I'm done trying to say bench him. They're not going to, Declan.
So basically you're saying the Eddie Rosario experience with the guy who messes up and has talent is essentially the same thing as the Declan Goff experience at Score North. There's things that he brings to the table that are awesome, and there's things you just have to accept in who he is.
The difference is I believe that a band should pick up this name immediately and dub itself the Eddie Rosario Experience.
It's a great name.
I love it.
I like it. So that is breaking football. A baseball game down like it is football. And now we welcome in our friend from ESPN Radio. You can also find him on ESPN TV. But Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin is the new ESPN Radio morning show you can find here on Score North in the Twin Cities from 5 to 9 a.m. Jay Williams in the house.
What's up, guys?
What's up?
I missed you guys. It's been a whole week.
It really has, yeah. It's
far too long, Jay. Far too long.
It has long-lost friends here. So what are you – I mean, the NBA playoffs are just ridiculous right now, but this is also week one of the NFL season. So before we dive into some NBA talk, what are you most looking forward to? And you're going to be talking a lot more NFL than you probably ever have in your career, but what are you most looking forward to now that the football season is here?
I mean, a whole bunch of things. I mean, obviously we could start off in your own hometown. I mean, Kirk Cousins, what happened last week, and knowing Kirk and – you know, I think one of the challenges that a lot of people have, you know, these days is, look, nobody is out here saying that we're politicians, but, you know, everything you say can be used against you, right, in some frame or reference. And so navigating that is going to be challenging. But, you know, obviously for him, you know, coming off an impressive season, you know, just under 70% of his passes, 3,000-plus yards, 26 touchdowns, you know, it'll be competitive. What's going to happen in, you know, in your division? It's interesting what's going to happen with the Dallas Cowboys. It's something that's always been intriguing to me. What did they do with Dak Prescott? Obviously, we saw Deshaun Watson get paid a ton of money. Now him and Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, the three highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. So what happens as it relates to that? Look, a lot of storylines going on. What's going to go on with the Chiefs? Leonard Fournette obviously going to Tampa Bay. Tom Brady playing this year. All the weapons he's going to have around him. Is that going to be enough to get by the Saints? We're paying attention to this Alvin Kamara deal going on. Will he get paid? I think he should get paid. So, look, man, I know it's my first time talking football, but my cousin was also David Tyree, who made that incredible catch.
Wow. Yeah.
So I have been a fan for a long time. Now I actually just get a chance to hear Keyshawn talk and just scream at him every single day because he's not the only person that actually knows football. You know?
The Tyree catch, unbelievable skill or lots of luck?
I think even DT will tell you a lot of luck. But I will tell you, you know, he's no longer with the Giants. He left. But, one of the main reasons I played basketball, guys, because every time growing up, I was being stiff-armed by my cousin, right? My face was literally planted in the streets, my side of my cheek. So the years and the countless hours of effort that he put into making challenging catches, you have to give a little bit of that skill, too.
You bring up Kirk Cousins. And so from your perspective, so I'll give you a quick download on Judd and I have kind of been in lockstep on Kirk Cousins and that he's definitely one of the 15 best quarterbacks in the world. And he should be commended for that. And the problem in the NFL is it's a supply and demand issue and that there are 32 teams looking for a franchise quarterback. And there's only like 20 or 22, maybe 23 that are worth crowning as a franchise quarterback. And so they all make $30+ million in a salary cap league. It's less about complaining about how much money someone makes and more discussing the strategy of how you should allocate your salary cap money, right? And so we look and see, well, wait a second. Russell Wilson, who's a superior quarterback who can avoid pressure and doesn't need a great offensive line to put up big numbers and to impact the team, Russell Wilson and Kirk Cousins make basically the same amount of money. And so the Vikings are at a disadvantage when it comes to roster building compared to Seattle or other teams. And so we like Kirk Cousins and that he brings some stability, but we also feel like he's probably not good enough to carry a team, but gets paid like it in a salary cap league. And that's what we're trying to untangle here going into 2020. Can you actually win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins making the money that he makes within the salary cap structure?
I don't think so. And I think that's a challenge. I mean, we were literally having an argument today about Lamar Jackson and, you know, obviously, you know, where would he get paid in upper echelon, his ability to scout and do things in pocket. If you're not actually allocating that money properly towards, you know, other pieces of your team, then I think you ultimately have to struggle. And look, I know the quarterback is it's the sexiest position. It's the position that demands the most money for most of the times for a lot of teams. But if you pay a guy that amount of money, which I love Kirk, but Kirk shouldn't be in the same breath as Russell Wilson, right? Then that hinders you from obviously taking your team to the next level, whether that be defense or how your team is prioritized, you know, what strategy they play with. Teams can just be lock and step with the way they go about it, and that hinders you from winning a Super Bowl.
Hey, but back to what Kirk said, too. If you played with Kirk, and look, I get it. Everyone's got the right to their opinion, and what he said was not exactly, you know, shocking, like I don't care. He just basically gave his opinion. But if you were in that locker room, how would you feel about that comment?
You know, man, like I got a chance to meet Kirk maybe about a couple of years ago when the Final Four was in Minneapolis, and we spent some time just talking. And I, obviously, reading about him, I know he's always been a faith-based guy. And, you know, he sounded very reasonable and sound when I spoke to him, like he had his head on straight. I know that's a personal preference. This is the whole thing that's going to throw a loop into this whole year, though, with COVID and, you know, your individual beliefs and whether other teammates believe those same things. And, hey, I know he came out and kind of retracted the statement to a degree and just taking wearing masks seriously. But then you wonder that, like, this could seep – these kind of things seep into locker rooms. I don't care what anybody says. Now, if somebody happens to see Kirk and he's around people that maybe – they're not sure who they are, or he's bringing up certain friends, depending upon what's happened throughout the course of a season. If he's around you without a mask, you could feel a certain way about it. And, you know, look, so much of this, of our sport, football, basketball, all it has to do with trust, guys. You know, it has to do with trust. And if you don't know your teammates and what you're asking your teammates to do, if they have, like for me personally, guys, like my daughter is immune suppressed. My mom is immune suppressed. She's had 2 kidney transplants. So it's something that Keyshawn and I talk about, right? Because Keyshawn goes out to eat all the time. And I'm like, hey, Key, you know, you're being weary of who you keep your eye, like who you're around, you know, who are you talking to? Because I have to be around you every single day. So, you know, if you're not going to be responsible, you know, that's going to make our situation a little bit more challenging at work because I don't want something to happen to my daughter. Now, I know I can't control that, but you still try to do as much as possible to limit your risk. And anybody that tries to tell you, well, this is just football, regardless of whatever your belief on it is, you have 100-plus guys that are dealing with the same thing that are all trying to handle, you know, how serious they're taking it depending upon what issues their family has or what issues they have. It's going to be it's a big thing.
Yeah. And the Viking, one of the key defensive players for the Vikings, Michael Pierce, defensive tackle, opted out because he is immune compromised and doesn't want to. Especially when you're a quarterback, you're the leader of any football franchise or any franchise. Like your words land differently, and you just have to be mindful. Jay Williams is our guest here. I'm Mackie and Judd. You can hear him 5 to 9 a.m. Central Time here on Score North AM 1500 in the Twin Cities. Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Zubin. Before we say goodbye, NBA playoffs have been. I think the NBA has just nailed this bubble concept. It's super fun to watch. The biggest talker right now is what's happening with Giannis and the Bucks, and he's a free agent in a year if he wants to be. What do you think happens with Giannis and the Bucks if they do go on to lose this series, Jay?
Well, they're cap restricted, so you'll see the same team next year. I think ultimately it comes down to Giannis is always. Struck me as somebody he wants to do the right thing, guys. Like he's probably going to try to play in the next game. I know people are going to try to tell me he probably shouldn't play, but he'll probably play. The reality is, John Horst and company, they have a lot of work to do. You look at, obviously, you can factor in COVID and, the amount of regular season success that this team has had. But ultimately, if you're Giannis, you want to win a championship. I think he would rather do that in Milwaukee. So I think you'll have a year to see, what John Horst and what Mark Lazary, the owner of the team, what they can do as relates to making moves. Can they get some younger pieces around him? And obviously, I don't think they're going to be able to finish it off this year. But that's a really tough situation. I will say this as it relates to him playing. I'll never forget this, guys. Being on the plane coming back from Toronto with Kevin Durant and Rich Kleiman after he tore his Achilles. I'm not saying this particular injury is the same as Kevin Durant's, but a lot of people on that team told him he needed to play, right? A lot of people were like, hey, you can play, you can go out there, even though they knew he was at a high risk for an injury. So, I really think ultimately the decision that the franchise and Giannis make over the next 10 hours or so before he plays or if he chooses not to play can really impact how Giannis will look at this team ultimately, right? Like, are you doing what's in Giannis's best interest for himself and for long term, or you think about just trying to, we have to do anything we can to win this game. And it's unfair, but as we're all human beings here, if you get pushed in one direction more than the other and you don't feel like maybe it's ultimately up to your choice, even though it is up to your choice, but somebody says, hey, you should play, you need to play, those things can be held against you in long term. Especially for a guy that's considering, what he wants to do long term with his career.
Yeah, gosh, that's
crazy. It's so sensitive, right?
The Kevin Durant parallel, and I know you have a great relationship with him, but that Kevin Durant parallel is a really interesting one. And like people always get on athletes if they look out for themselves and they're selfish. But Kevin Durant lost a year of his career in his prime because he felt pressure to play in that game. So
and you don't know how that can affect you long term, right? You just say, oh, it's easy for Giannis to get the supermax. But I don't know if he loves to Euro step through traffic. If he steps on somebody's foot again, and let's say the ankle sprain, we never seen anything, pray knock on wood, come out really bad from that. But say something, get ligament damage or, I don't know, for a guy that really isn't a great shooter, the strength of his game is attacking the rim. I can guarantee you if something bad were to happen, you would have people that look at it and say, well, what's his game like right now that he can't get to the rim and his game is based off being explosive. That's a tough call. A really tough call.
We should give you 30 seconds to just pander to Carl Anthony Towns and Bradley Beal playing together next year.
Reckless speculation.
Go ahead.
Cat, I'm talking to you. First off, I love you. I miss you. We went to the same high school. I got to tell you, though, if you get a chance to bring Devin Booker or to bring Bradley Beal to your hometown, get it done. You guys need it. You need it. You and D-Lo together, phenomenal. You, D-Lo, and Bradley Beal? What? I'll be seeing you during the NBA Finals. We'll be talking about you this time next year or in years to come. We're talking about multiple MVP opportunities for you guys there and also to come out of your division every single year. You guys will be the team you've always dreamed of playing. Trust me, we're both from Jersey. We're both from St. Joseph Metuchen. I know where you want to be. Get it done with Bradley Beal. Reckless
speculation.
Reckless speculation.
Jay Williams, man. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
Awesome.
Right,
thanks, Jay.
You can find him, Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin, 5-9 on Score North in the Twin Cities. So let's send that out on the internet there today. Let's get people excited.
Where he's talking to Kat.
Let's get people excited.
Need something Wolves-wise, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
it is amazing how
there's basically nothing going on at all. But now
the NBA is so much fun right now, and the Timberwolves just feel so far away from everything that's happening in the bubble right now. And the Timberwolves just
they haven't played since March.
Very far away from it.
I mean, they got the top pick, but that was what one night basically of excitement. And now Doogie said the draft's going to be when. It sounds like they're going to back it up again. So
yeah, I think November or something is what he told us last week.
I'll check in with you then.
So, all right, we do have other things to get to Twins related, but I think we should here's a couple things I think we should save for. They have off days this week, but I definitely want to talk about the fact that they are still treating this season as if it's spring training in a lot of ways with their lineups and bullpens. But we can do that later this week.
Mm-hmm.
And Brent Rooker made his debut over the last few days too, and looks pretty damn good. But I think we should save those for tomorrow.
Okay.
And the day after.
All right.
Because we have to also talk about Vikings football.
Football. Starts this week.
Yeah, I think they're starting to settle in. We're going to have to do a good job against their front. They're a very big physical front. They got two really good edge rushers. They moved Za'Darius Smith around quite a bit. So it'll be a good test for us. We've showed him a few plays where he's made some unbelievable, incredible throws, and you're going to be looking at trying to make a tackle as opposed to getting the ball out.
All right, Mike Zimmer talking about the first clip was him on the Vikings offensive line, and then the second clip was him talking about Aaron Rodgers. And the Aaron Rodgers-Mike Zimmer chess match over the last 6 years has been a really fun one. Not always fun for Rodgers because there was that one game where, I don't know, he broke his clavicle or whatever it was. Would you know that Packers fans still hate Anthony Barr and stand by their version of the events that it was a dirty play by Anthony Barr?
They'll never give that up. Ever.
Like, yeah. Rodgers rolled out to his right.
Mm-hmm.
He saw Anthony Barr coming for probably 15 yards, like in terms of just how maybe more than that. It was Rodgers trying to wait till the last second. It was a bang-bang play.
Yep.
It happens. Get over
and wasn't it the very next season where they put the enforcement on quarterback hits, and then Clay Matthews got called for a hit on Jared Goff in week
Matthews
three?
And it was four just like,
and Cousins.
It was the same hit.
Yeah. And Cousins, too.
It's hilarious. Yeah, Clay Matthews definitely felt the brunt of that rule change. He had four textbook tackles of quarterbacks that all got flagged in key spots.
That was one of the stupidest, most reactive changes ever because it made no sense, and they didn't know. It got enforced differently game to game to game.
Yes. So, all right. So here's the question here, key Vikings question of the week. Do you guys think the Vikings should be favorites in the NFC North going into the 2020 season?
I actually do. I think that if you look at offensively, they should still be good. I'm not sure they're great, but that line, pass protection-wise, is going to have question marks, but I think it can run block. You've still got Cook. You've got Thielen. Cousins, for as tough as we are on Kirk, is a good player for sure.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what this team has offensively and then go to the fact that there's going to have to be a certain amount of trust with Zim when it comes to his cornerbacks, but he's got veteran safeties. He's got two-thirds of his best linebacking core back who's going to play on a regular basis, right? And the difference to me is the Ngakoue trade now takes them from being of that defensive line is suspect. Danielle Hunter's going to be good on the left end, but, are they going to be successful trying to replace Griffin on the right end? And there are certainly questions in the interior of that line, and there still are. But when you have Hunter on the left end and Ngakoue on the right, that's pretty damn good. I still stand by my contention that the Packers, who won 13 games last year, are not a 13-win type of team. I have no idea what the Bears are doing. Mitch Trubisky won the job. Really? You're trying to save face that bad that your GM and coach basically are going to put themselves on the chopping block for Mitch Trubisky? It's really worth it? Congratulations. You might be awful. I have no idea. The Lions are going to lion. Matt Patricia,
Well, they got Peterson.
Matt Patricia, again, has bitten off more than he can chew by taking on a player who is going to, especially if he gets to the Vikings games for the Lions, demand the football and tell Patricia to go climb a tree while he takes the game over because he's still great, even though he's not. I think the Vikings are good. I will indict the rest of the division by saying I don't think it's that good and tell you that if I put that together in a NFC North football stew, I get the Vikings winning the division.
Dex?
I think they are, especially after the Ngakoue signing. I believe now you essentially have canceled out what the Packers have been able to do with Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, and that line's pretty dang good. But Ngakoue and Danielle Hunter on the same line, it has an advantage right there. And Aaron Rodgers, I mean, who's he going to throw to outside of Davante Adams? I mean, Alan Lazard's a nice player, but I don't see him stepping up and taking things over. I look at everything that they've been able to do on offense, even with me being as bullish on Aaron Jones as I am, I think regression is most likely coming to number one, that defense, and then I don't think the offense can carry them. Like, their defense was their staple last year. It kind of helped things out a little bit, and I don't want to say they overachieved, but I don't know if they can do that 2 years in a row. It's just so hard to do that in the NFL, regardless of how good your defense is. So I think the Vikings are the favorites. Similar to what Judd said, I think this division is going to be kind of your old black and blue division. It's probably going to be maybe a 10-win team or even a 9-win team that wins it. But I think the Vikings have to be the favorites. I don't look at anyone. No one really scares me in the division.
I think they're both playoff teams, Packers and Vikings. Bears, it's just going to, I mean, there's so many things up in the air with the Bears. I think Matt Nagy is still a question mark. Obviously, their quarterback situation is a question mark. I am shocked that they're going to roll the dice again with Mitch Trubisky.
It's a safe face move.
It felt like an easy time to just move on from him.
Agreed.
And just let him be the backup. And actually, you know, think about this. Nick Foles, let me look this up real quick. Is Nick Foles even 30 years old yet? He's been around for a little while.
He's got to be 30 by now.
He's 31. Okay.
Yeah.
But Nick Foles is still in his quarterback prime. So yeah. Nick Foles still has, like, let's say 6 more years left of quarterback prime. And he has performed at a very high level when everything's been right around him. I'm not saying that Nick Foles has a chance to be like a top 8 quarterback or anything. But if you have a chance to sort of roll the dice and see, all right, is there something for the next 3 years there with either one of these guys? Why would you not just go with Nick Foles? Like, he did it in a Super Bowl. So that's weird. I don't think the Bears are like an 11-5, 12-4 type of a threat. I do think overall they're going to be competitive enough to at least give the Vikings problems. But I think I'm with Declan on this one. I think Yannick Ngakoue changes the division. I really do, because I think it moves the Vikings from, boy, could this be the worst defense in Mike Zimmer's tenure as Vikings coach, to, okay, they're back to being a top 10 defense. Now the question is, are they like the 10th best defense, or are they going to flirt with being top 5, top 3? When you have those two guys coming off the edge, it literally just creates a ripple effect through the rest of the defense. And now you're sort of, instead of being like, you've got problems at the up front, and now you've got problems in the secondary, you really only have question marks, for me anyways, you really only have true question marks with those rookie cornerbacks. And if one of those guys, Gladney or Cam Dantzler, catches on, this defense is going to be just fine.
The interior line run defense scares me a little bit, but I don't think it's going to kill them.
Yep, that's a fair point. So I just think, like, for me, before the trade of Ngakoue, I'm putting the Vikings on 8-8, 9-7, and they'll need some help to make the playoffs too. I'm pretty confident this is now a 10-6 team with upside that wins the division. So
seems very fair. Yeah.
But it wouldn't shock me if, like, Judd's super low on the Lions. It wouldn't shock me if they still have Matt Stafford. It wouldn't shock me if the Lions, you know, put a wrench into this thing and flirted with 500. So I don't think there's a dumpster fire team in this division. Judd thinks there's one. I don't think there is one.
Yeah, based on the fact that my belief is the coach of the Lions is a complete moron. I mean, Matt Patricia's awful. He's got no clue. He's a coordinator. He's a career. Coordinators don't have to be worried about leading entire teams. Coaches do. I don't think Matt Patricia has any idea how to lead a group of people to a common goal.
Yeah. Also,
like, if it's a defensive goal, I think he can. But if it's a 53-man offense, defense, special teams goal, I think Matt Patricia is an incredibly book-smart moron.
Two other notes here on Vikings and Packers that I want to bring up. I don't think, even though I would take Aaron Rodgers over Kirk Cousins, it's certainly not the same gap that it was 5 years ago.
Yep.
And I don't think there's a discernible difference between the eventual, like, output of the Vikings offense versus the Packers offense. I don't think you look at those offenses. Like, you can definitely look and say, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is a Hall of Famer and Kirk Cousins isn't.
Yep.
But I don't think you can look at the totality of those offenses now, especially now that the Vikings maintained Riley Reiff's stability at left tackle.
Yep.
It's not a great offensive line, but they still have competency at quarterback. They've got one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, one of the best running backs in the NFL. They've got two good pass-catching tight ends.
And they can run block.
A scheme and a system that work.
They can run block,
and they
too,
can
yeah.
run block, yes.
Here's my question. I hope that the Packers struggle offensively for, like, the first three games, because I would love to see the eventual fallout here. Rodgers, there's no way that he's taking this well. I mean, they literally looked at these receiving options at pick 26 and we're like, let's take a quarterback. And now Jordan Love.
Go, Pat, go!
Jordan Love is going to start the season as the number three. He wasn't even good enough in training camp because he's a kid. His head is swimming.
Yeah, he needed more camp, in fairness.
Well, but I'm not blaming him. My point is, though, if I am a 35, 36 year old QB who's still pretty damn good. I might not be as great as I once was, certainly, but I'm still good, right?
Okay, Toby Keith.
And my team looked at me and was like, we could get you a lot of help here. Pass. To get your successor?
Yeah.
That's going to come back to bite you in the ass eventually. You don't tell me everything's fine. No, it's not. And I hope they struggle because I want to see that blow up because I am a rubbernecking sports fan here on 94, and this could be great fun just to watch it implode.
I mean, I'm glad you went back to this because there has to be major trust issues between Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur at this point. And those guys have both done a great job of, like, saying sort of the right things. LaFleur has I think it's very obvious that LaFleur is just, like, getting talking points fed to him. But just let's go back to that draft for a second, all right? So the Packers coming off a 13-win season with a Hall of Fame quarterback that probably has like two or three years left of top play left. Not the same guy he was, but like...
Before he gets here, you mean?
Before he comes to the Vikings inevitably, right? So they go into the draft knowing that, man, we were 13-3 last year. Mm-hmm. Okay, but there was a big difference between us and the 49ers, and so we just need to close that gap between us and the 49ers. And they draft a backup quarterback with their first pick. And a backup running back with their second pick. They don't draft a player that could actually help them on paper until the third round when they drafted the tight end, Josiah DeGuara from Cincinnati. Like, the Packers have a chance, a small window the next couple years to win a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they chose a backup quarterback, a future potential starting quarterback, and a running back. Like, it is the most amazing gift as a Vikings fan you could get from the Packers. How asinine is that draft strategy? All of those guys should be fired. I don't care if Jordan Love pans out. Like, you have flushed away the last 3 years of Aaron Rodgers' career on a flyer that Jordan Love could be your starting quarterback.
It makes no sense at all.
Like, completely
It makes no
idiotic.
Sense at all, but there's no way that it's not going to come back at some point in time, hopefully soon, just to watch it play out and bite them in the ass. There's no way.
It's going to be hilarious.
If Rodgers has... three balls dropped in the first two games. He's going to go ballistic, and he should. So that's the one that if they are truly intent, and it looks like they probably are, with the next couple of years of going to Jordan Love, you have done your entire division the greatest service of all time because you've basically taken this run that began in 92 with Favre and extended through now and said, yeah, we're smart enough to move on from that.
You know, it kind of reminds me of the way Kevin Costner botched the Browns draft in the 2014 movie Draft Day that was on Fox last night. Did you guys see that?
Jennifer Garner, right?
Yeah.
Jennifer Garner's in that. I've seen part of it.
You know, like all the hubbub. Have you seen like the end sequence where they wind up?
I don't think I have. Declan, maybe.
Dex, have you seen this movie?
I have not. I've made it through half it, and it was confirmed that it was one of the worst films of all time.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I love me some Kevin Costner sports movies. It's great. But so he's wheeling and dealing. He's the GM of the Cleveland Browns, and there's a consensus number one quarterback at the top of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets wind through just his own recon that this quarterback, Bo Callahan, is not the leader that he thought. That Bo Callahan doesn't have the...
Oh, Spielman-like.
The skills that he thought. Well, Spielman would have drafted him.
He put a red dot by him.
No, yeah. Spielman would have drafted him.
Spielman would have taken him.
But he winds up doing all this wheeling and dealing to draft a middle linebacker with the number one overall pick and a running back with like the number six overall pick.
Wait.
In 2014
is
NFL.
This like 1989?
But that's what the Packers did. The Packers basically said, "All right, we're gonna get in here."
Well, at least their position priorities were far closer to being right than linebacker and running back.
No, but they weren't because they drafted a backup quarterback.
No, I know, but the position priority. I mean, a linebacker. Who takes a linebacker first?
It's true.
You've got to be on drugs.
It's hilarious.
Linebackers have not been truly sexy since like 1992.
Yeah. All due respect to Eric Kendricks.
That's right,
but. But that is that's the consensus. We all
think
they're the favorites. I can't
believe the amount of time you spent watching films this weekend.
It's great. I watched my first two Star Wars movies, which we will break down later this week. Watch me some WrestleMania Goes Hollywood, WrestleMania 21.
Oh, God, 21. I'm so excited to review it.
We're gonna put Mania Rewind on hiatus for 1 week because we have a bunch of stuff going on in a short week. Go ahead, Dex.
All right. Can I change my action movie Rewind picks? I've realized the error of my ways.
You want to do this right now?
I want to do this right now. Can I just do this right now? Because I know Judd watches the films by midweek, and I don't want him to watch two films.
Tomorrow. So, it's carved out.
So
yes.
I'm just going to have an impact.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Action Movie Reviews with Mackie, Judd, and Rami.
Get to the chopper!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother.
Do we need to set this up? I think we need to set this up.
Go ahead.
All right. So Declan was on vacation. He is currently producing from home and quarantining because he took his first flight during the COVID period. And so Declan had pre-recorded his pick for next week's action movie reel. We alternate who picks which movie. And if you're new, every Friday we break down action movies from the past. And the heart and the spirit of Action Movie Rewind is to pick movies that we can make fun of and have fun with. And Declan literally picked like a movie that is completely shielded from making fun of because you picked Black Panther, which like, first of all, like Black Panther is an empowering movie. It has empowered millions of black people from around the country and around the world. And it features, tragically, Chadwick Boseman, who just passed away last week.
Can't make fun of a guy who just died, man. Can't do it. Sorry.
And so like. As much as I love the movie Black Panther, it is a great movie. It is not necessarily a great or it's not even really a good fit for Action Movie Rewind because we can't. There's like no part of that movie that we can with good conscience make fun of. So we would just be praising it for 30, 40 minutes.
Right. Makes sense. I would love to do, but it is not on brand. And I am someone who loves to admit he's wrong. And typically I'm wrong. So I want to correct.
We have
my
old
mistakes.
Tweets exposed is coming up shortly here, by the way, to prove that we're wrong.
Who might not be kind to any of us.
So to pick one that's maybe more on brand, and I still have a whole note page of notes of ones I want to pick, but I think this one is more on brand and it's more in the timeline and it fits. So instead of Black Panther, we're gonna do Bad Boys instead from the 90s.
There it is. Dude.
Will Smith, Martin Lawrence.
Yes. Bad Boys. Okay.
That's what we're gonna do.
Nice. Okay. I don't know if I have seen Bad Boys straight through, but I know enough about Bad Boys to know that is the spirit of Action Movie Rewind right there.
I've seen the second one. I don't think I've seen from start to finish.
But we're doing the first one, right, Dex?
Yeah, the first one, and I believe it is on Netflix.
Okay.
So 1995.
Judd was ready to bring fatherly Judd to bring sports dad to the equation if we did Black Panther on Friday.
Oh, he kind of have a talking to. I had a couple 12 or 10 Corona extras when I was texting Judd on Saturday, and he kind of showed me the letter. So I said
my final line on the text thread to Dex was if our friend Rami loves a film, don't pick it because like he loves cartoon, but like really good films, and you can't make fun of them as much.
And that's the other thing. Like, we have to decide
offense to our buddy.
Where do we draw the line between an action movie and a comic book movie too? Because I think there can be some blending together there. And I have a couple on my list that I think we absolutely should get into that would get into the comic book section of these movies. But Bad Boys is the new action movie
Declan?
For Friday. Love
Bad it. 159. You hit the sweet spot.
Oh, yeah.
Running time, 159. It hits the sweet spot.
Perfect.
Way to go, my boy.
Perfect.
All right. That, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, that is how you compromise right there. And that is how you raise your hand and admit that, all right, this might not be serving.
And Netflix, too? It's on Netflix?
I believe so.
I'm very excited. No, thank you.
Can we roll right into some old tweets exposed here?
Of course. Oh, my gosh. Of course. Right.
Hey, real quick, before we get into old tweets exposed here, where Declan goes back into 11, 12 years of Twitter archives and exposes us for how wrong we have been at times. A quick shout out to PodMN. PodMN is a brand new free-to-download app in the Google Play Store or Apple Store for you to discover and listen to local Minnesota podcasts. That's right. You think about all these third-party apps, whether it's Apple, Spotify, and I use all of these too. There's not really a great place until now to actually discover Minnesota sports podcasts, non-sports podcasts, travel, whatever it is, local and locally rooted podcasts in the state of Minnesota. You can now discover them through the PodMN app, podmn.com, to find out more information. Free to download. All right.
Okay.
Let's do this.
So there's a theme to old tweets exposed this week. All three of us are bringing Eddie Rosario takes that need to be brought back up. So we're going to start with Judd. I usually start with Phil, but we're going to start with Judd here. And this is from September 25th, 2015. Judd tweets.
Man down.
Judd tweets. That's Rosario. I've said all along, this guy has baseball smarts.
Oh, my God. Medic.
Dude.
Medic.
Wow. 7:28 p.m.
No, I'm probably
September 25th.
I'm probably at a game.
It's early in the game here. It's September 25th. It's late in the season.
Hold on. I'm going to find out if the Twins were at home that day. Although
I will say that my guess is, so 2015, that might have been the year where they almost sniffed a wild card spot.
It was. Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay, so they weren't terrible that year.
But
your baseball goggles were on, your beer goggles were on, because they had been mostly terrible for 5 years by that point.
Oh, my
gosh. So you're just wishfully thinking and hoping that you've seen an actual young player pan out.
I feel like you're trying to make excuses for an inexcusable tweet.
It's pretty
and
bad.
You look, really Rosario was pretty awesome that in his rookie year when he got called up in 2015. He had a bunch of bombs. I think he even led the league in outfield assists, only playing in like 100 games.
Yeah, he did.
But, ooh, Judd.
Pretty
yikes,
bad.
September 25th. No, that, ooh, that might have been a few beers in. They were at Detroit that night, which probably means it was a Friday night, so it was probably a 6 o'clock start. Yeah, I was drinking. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. Robin Williams, it's not my fault.
Amazing.
Okay, well, that was a good find, Dex.
You know what the weird thing about Rosario is? He's certainly not a bust because he's been a 20 home run guy. He drives in runs. He has big hits.
Yeah, no, that's what drives you crazy.
He's so frustrating when he makes mistakes.
I want to say, too, in 15, is that the year that teams continued to run on his arm all the time?
Yeah.
And you were like,
exactly.
What?
Yes.
So that must have been he threw. God bless America. He threw to the right base, gotten out, and I thought, oh wow, he's baseball smart.
All right,
Judd is not alone.
What do you got?
Judd is not alone.
Oh my God!
This is from May 4th, 2015.
Oh, dude, I still stand by this. Kind of.
Oh, it's better than mine. It's better. I can't jump
there
on this.
A couple
one.
Options actually Phil had for Eddie Rosario, so okay. I ended up using this one. But Eddie Rosario owns a slash line of 243, 285, 385 between AA and AAA the past two seasons.
Yep.
Not sure that'll translate well to the big leagues. One like.
Okay. Who's the one like, by
yourself.
The way? Oh, look at Jake DePue. Jake DePue
Jake
jumping
DePue.
In there.
It's like the. It's like it's the Twins
goal. Read his tweet. It's genius. DePue from the top rope.
DePue says, it's like it's the Twins goal to mind bleep Aaron Hicks as much as possible. Going on 3 years now. The Twins did mind bleep Aaron Hicks, although Aaron Hicks did approach the Twins one time about just eliminating
him. They let
him.
Himself
as a switch hitter. I'm going to hit right-handed from now on. Who's pitching today? You, Darvish. Good luck. Have fun, kid. All right.
All right, defend yourself, though.
So, all right, there's not a full defense for this, but my point was, if you can't get on base at a high clip in double and triple A, you're not going to be able to get on base at a high clip in the major leagues. And my defense is, Eddie Rosario has not gotten on base at a high clip in the major leagues. His career on base percentage is .309, which is well below league average. He's a below average on base guy. What I didn't account for is that he would also turn into a 30 home run hitter and have big hits late in games and bring swag to the Twins clubhouse that they sorely needed. So I was right about the on-base part. I was wrong about the overall product. Because Eddie Rosario, as frustrating as he can be, has been a positive player for the Twins.
I tweeted he was baseball smart.
That's worse.
Yeah, that's more egregious.
I'm losing. I'm in last place right now. Unless Declan really has a awful take, I'm in last place. I'm taking the L. All
right. I always self-report. This is from June 2014. Could we package Eddie Rosario and Sam Deduno and potentially get something awesome? 2 question marks. I think we could.
June 4th, 2014, the day that Declan became the could we just package some crappy things together for something awesome guy?
Yes. Yes. Sam Deduno. I like how I had to throw in Sam Deduno into that too. Because like Eddie Rosario was a top 10 prospect, but like I had to include wildly ineffective Sam Deduno.
God, Sam Deduno's amazing. Sam Deduno reminds me, you ever see these movies where like somebody gets in or like what's that? Speaking of action movies, what's the Arnold Schwarzenegger one from the True Lies where he gets in like a fighter plane for the first time in years and it's like, whoa, I don't know where this is going. Sam Deduno.
Yeah.
Whoa, I throw 95 with movement. Oh, my God. This is crazy. Like everybody look out.
I got this arm and I don't know what to do with it. Hey, here's a baseball. Yeah.
He's like the bionic arm kid from that Rookie of the Year movie in the early 90s. Right. Like, whoa, I didn't know I threw that hard.
I got bad news. I still lose.
It is, yeah. Judge is the
like,
worst.
This is hilarious.
This is funny.
But it's because of Deduno. I called Rosario baseball smart.
Okay, how are we? Yeah, we should incorporate the old Tweet Exposed rankings, just the three that Declan puts out every week. So,
Start with this one?
So Judd gets the win this week, right? Judd gets the win.
Win or the loss, however you want to consider it. It was the most absurd tweet.
The win being the most absurd tweet. Who gets the second place medal? I think it's probably Declan trying to package Deduno.
Me. Yeah, and you're third.
Probably. Yeah. Okay.
Mine was still bad, too, but. There it is. Old Tweets Exposed.
Those were good finds. I got to go back and start deleting tweets.
Yeah, I can't remember the other one. Mackie had two, and I was trying to decide which one to use last night, and I'm just blanking on what it was, but both of them I thought were fitting the things of Eddie Rosario.
Too many beers, you know, on vacation, Declan. That'll do that to you.
It's this segment that makes me never – like I don't delete tweets really ever. The only tweet I've ever deleted outside of like – if I had a typo or something right. or whatever.
That doesn't count.
I deleted when I signed up to work at 1500 ESPN in 2010. I had been tweeting for a year. And a few weeks before introduced to Patrick Roycey to potentially work with him, I had a tweet about Pat being like a belligerent clown for something he wrote about the Twins in the Star Tribune. And I was like, you know, I don't want Pat to read this. I'll tell him about it on the show, but I don't want to read this. There are local media members that do delete their tweets. And I feel like... I feel like you should when you tweet your stuff out there, you should just let your stuff
often
sit out there. Yes. Yes.
What did I know about this?
There's a couple of them.
I should be aware of this.
There's a couple.
Yeah.
Really?
Maybe at some point we'll
maybe we'll incorporate other people's tweets into little tweets. Ooh,
if we can find them, if they haven't deleted them.
Yeah. Oh.